And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain right here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests has an interesting topic, no two of which are related. My first guest is a senior writer at the Sunlight Foundation, a nonprofit covering influence in politics. He explained why President Obama's appointment of William Daley as the White House Chief of Staff is a bad decision for the American people. My second guest is the senior manager for communications at the Consumer Electronics Show happening right now in Las Vegas. We discussed what's hot and what's not at the 2011 Consumer Electronics Show. My next guest is the best-selling author of Seabiscuit, an American legend, the story of the racehorse Seabiscuit, his owner, and the times that surrounded the event. She's also written a new book titled Unbroken, a World War II story of survival, resilience, and redemption, and that arose out of the research that she was actually doing for Seabiscuit. So we're going to talk a little bit more about her latest book. If you want to join in the conversation or if you want to speak to Laura Hillenbrand, you can always call us at 639-0008. Laura Hillenbrand, as I said, is an author of books and magazine articles. She was born in Fairfax, Virginia, but now lives in Washington, D.C. As a child, her favorite book was Come On, Seabiscuit, the 1963 kiddie book. I wonder if that had any influence over her first novel that she put out, her first nonfiction book that she put out. Her first book was the acclaimed Seabiscuit, an American legend, back in 2001. It was a nonfiction account of the career of the greatest racehorse, Seabiscuit, for which she won the William Hill Sports Book of the Year Award back in 2001. Many of you also know that it made an Academy Award-winning film, nominated film Seabiscuit in 2003. Hillenbrand's second book is titled Unbroken, and it's a biography of a World War II hero, Louis Zampieri, who was born in 1917 and is still alive today. Laura is also the co-founder of Operation Iraqi Children, which we'll ask her about a little bit later. She studied as an undergraduate at Kenyon College in Ohio, but she was forced to leave before graduation when she contracted chronic fatigue syndrome, which she has struggled with ever since. She's married and to a professor of government at American University in Washington, D.C. They were college sweethearts, and they were married back in 2008. Laura, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on there for a couple of reasons. First of all, I love your writing style, but also World War II is something that my listeners know is a fascinating subject for me. So Unbroken, your new book, is really a story of an incredible individual. He was a former Olympian. Then he turned a bombardier in a B-24 during World War II. He became a prisoner of war of the Japanese, and then he's also become a nonagenarian, which for those of the listeners that are out there, that is a person who's lived to be over 90 years old. His name is Louis Zampierini, if I'm pronouncing that right. So tell me the story. How did you first become aware of Louis, and what did you find fascinating about his life story?
Well, I found him actually through Seabiscuit. He and Seabiscuit were national sports stars back in the mid to late 1930s, and they stories about them actually filled the same newspapers. So as I was researching Seabiscuit, I kept coming across stories about this teenaged running sensation who made it to the Olympics at 19. And I wrote his name down in my research notebook, and when I got done working on Seabiscuit, I tracked him down and gave him a call, and he told me his life story, and I had never heard anything so amazing in my life, and I knew from that first conversation I had to write a book about this guy.
All right. Now, it's interesting because you're known for your research, and the research for this book really stretched worldwide. It stretched from Oslo, Norway, all the way to Canberra in Australia, and some might even say that you were obsessed with him. So why did the research spread so far across the globe for this guy? Why was he such an international phenomenon?
Well, he was a very famous man in the 1930s. It's funny, track and field is not nearly as big as it was back then, but back then, the best runners, people knew them everywhere. And actually, when Louis became a prisoner of war, all the Japanese knew who he was. The reason the research was so broad-ranging is that his experiences it was just a sprawling story. He's an Olympic star. He became a bombardier in World War II. He crashed in the Pacific and floated on a raft for 47 days and 2,000 miles, and then was captured by the Japanese and was a prisoner of war for 2.5 years. And in that period of time, his life overlapped with so many other people that there were just many, many places to look. So I was interviewing people from New Zealand and Australia and Britain and Norway, and there were things in archives all over the world. So it it really, the research led me everywhere. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, it's very interesting that you say he was so very well known, and even the Japanese, his captors during World War II, knew who he was. But in the words of Rodney Dangerfield, obviously he didn't get any respect because the Japanese didn't treat him any better simply because they knew who he was, did they?
Well, yes and no. He was condemned to execution just after his capture. And the Japanese decided at the last moment not to kill him because they wanted to make him a propaganda prisoner, to basically force him into making propaganda broadcasts against America. So they saved his life and they sent him to Japan, and he was in prisoner of war camps there. And to make him want to betray his country, they made his life a living hell. And he was set upon by a particular guard that they nicknamed the Bird, who was a psychopath. Who treated him absolutely horribly, and for the rest of the war, it was kind of a showdown between the wills of these two men, because Louis was a very, very defiant man. So while his Olympic career saved him from execution, it made his prisoner of war experience exceptionally difficult.
Well, that's interesting, and I'm going to veer off the path here for just a minute, Laura, and talk a little bit about some of the cruelty. You mentioned the Bird as the character there being a psychopath. And the cruelty and the brutality towards POWs by the Japanese is really one of the underreported stories of World War II. I mean, in many ways, the atrocities there during the war were every bit as bad as they were in Europe. We just don't hear about them. I mean, people maybe have read The Bridge Over the River Kwai, and they think that's the way it was in all the POW camps. But in reality, there was Camp 39 in China, and some of the atrocities that the Japanese perpetrated not only on Americans but also on the Chinese people. So in your research, did you research that particular angle of the Japanese cruelty during World War II?
Absolutely, yeah. And you are so right in that the world doesn't seem to be aware that Japan was on par with Germany in terms of the abuse they heaped on the rest of the world. And there are some historians that estimate the Japanese killed 20 million Chinese in their invasion of China. I did do a lot of research into this in part because a lot of the things that were done to civilian captives and to prisoners of war by the Japanese were done to Louis. Medical experiments were done on him, and this was something the Japanese did with a lot of their prisoners, both civilian and prisoner of war. The book was an occasion to examine what happened in Japan to make them behave the way they did, to put things into perspective from the point of view of the prisoners of war. Allied prisoners of war, American prisoners of war, who were held by the Nazis, died at a rate of 1%. But 37% of the American prisoners of war held by the Japanese died. That's 13,000 Americans.
That's an amazing statistic and one that I didn't know. So 1% of the prisoners under Nazi domination died, and 37% under Japanese. Now, that is very interesting and very, very revealing.
Yes.
I want to bring it back to the story if I can, though, Laura, because it was a little detour that we took there. Tell me about Louis when he was growing up, because he was not, he was a little bit of a scoundrel and a scamp, wasn't he? And that's a part of the book that maybe isn't as fleshed out as some of the other parts of the book. So tell us about Louis growing up, and how did his childhood help prepare him for some of the trials and tribulations that he went through, not only in the Olympics, but then later on as a prisoner of war?
Well, I like to refer to Louis as a one-boy insurgency. He was a completely unmanageable child right from the start. He was somebody who just was born resenting any kind of control being put over him. So his parents found him absolutely impossible to keep in hand. He was a thief. He loved stealing food. He would actually break into his neighbor's kitchen and take their dinners right off their tables while they were out of the room. He stole a whole keg once from a party. He pulled pranks all over town. He got into a lot of brawls. He was a terrible student. He was constantly being stopped by the police. He was a difficult person, but the interesting thing is all of that rebelliousness and defiance that he had as a child, as an adult, he took that same nature and turned it against death and turned it against his captors. He was a very, very difficult man to break. So when he was out on the life raft for 47 days and there were sharks leaping onto the raft to try to pull him into the water, or when he was being tormented as a prisoner of war, all of that defiance he was using to survive, so those same attributes that made him such a difficult kid helped him to stay alive.
Ah, that's great. We're talking to Laura Hillenbrand, everybody, author of the new book, Unbroken, a World War II story of survival, resilience, and redemption. Now, he left his upbringing here in California, Torrance, California, and he went on to become a track and field star that really sort of propelled him, as you say, to the international stage. He was a member of the 1936 Olympic Games in Berlin, Germany. So a question naturally comes to mind, did he get a chance to meet Hitler?
He did. He was actually the youngest distance runner ever to make the Olympic team. He was just a teenager. And he went over there. He got very fat on the ship on the way over. He just kept eating and eating and eating, and he gained 12 pounds
wow.
over the journey. He was out of shape because he couldn't really run on the ship. And he didn't have a good race until his last lap, when he turned loose his speed and he passed many people. He did not get a medal. But in that era, it was a great race if you could run your final lap of the 5,000 meters in 70 seconds, and he ran it in 56.
Wow.
And one of the people in the crowd who was enthralled by his performance was Adolf Hitler. Now, Louis had no idea really who Adolf Hitler was. He's a kid, and nobody knew yet what he was going to do. But Hitler called him over to his box and said, "You're the boy with the fast finish," and they shook hands, and that was his little adventure.
Well, it wasn't his only adventure while he was in Berlin, was it? I mean, how did Louis's delinquent past and his passion for stealing things get him in trouble while he was there in Berlin?
The entire time he was in Berlin, he was stealing things, little souvenirs, you know, ashtrays and anything he could find that he could stuff into his pockets or his suitcase, he took. And he drank a liter of German beer, and then he wandered around Berlin and he got to the Chancellery Building, and he saw these Nazi banners hanging in front of it, and he wanted one. So he walked over there. There were two guards patrolling, two armed guards, and while their backs were turned, he tried to jump up and down and catch the flag. And they spotted him while he was jumping, and he took one last leap, tore down the flag, and started running away with it. They fired into the air and told him to halt. He stopped, and they went over and apprehended him and asked him what he was doing, and he basically sweet-talked them into allowing him to keep the flag, which he still has today.
Wow. That is incredible. And it should be noted that Louis is still alive. He's, what, 93 or 94 years old now?
He's just about to turn 94, and he's in wonderful shape.
Oh, that is great. We're talking to Laura Hillenbrand, everybody, whose latest book is Unbroken. And then he leaves the Olympics and was obviously a very famous athlete during the Olympics. War breaks out, and Louis ends up as a bombardier in a B-24. So in researching for the book, what did you learn about being any crew member on one of these bombers in the Pacific?
There was a lot to learn, and the thing that really startled me about learning about the experience of airmen in World War II is how dangerous a job this was outside of combat. I knew that combat was extremely deadly to these men. They actually had only a 50% chance of surviving 30 missions, which was a tour of duty. So this was very dangerous in combat, but outside of combat, these planes were crashing all the time. There were mechanical problems. There was pilot error. There were all kinds of things that could bring them down. And the statistic that staggered me the most was that 36,000 American airmen died in non-combat crashes in World War II. Another 15,000 died in training stateside without ever going into a combat theater. So this was dangerous business.
It absolutely was. And in the great irony of the book, or one of the many ironies, I should say, in the book, Louis actually, his plane goes down and he's stranded, as you said, in the life raft for 47 days. But the irony is that the plane was out on a mission looking for another plane that was lost at sea.
Yeah. And from my research, it appears that these planes were so likely to crash that planes that were on search missions for other lost planes were actually more likely to crash themselves than they were to actually find the people they were looking for. And that's what happened to them. Their plane had a mechanical failure and crashed at very high speed. And of the 11 men on board, only three survived, Louis, the pilot, and the tail gunner. And they ended up on a raft together.
And that is, again, part of the survival and the resilience that he exhibited. The B-24 was known as the coffin maker during World War II. Why was it known by that name, Laura?
They called it the flying coffin.
Oh,
and
flying coffin.
Part of that was it looked like a coffin. It looked like a coffin with wings on it. It's a big, ugly thing. But it also was a plane that there were a lot of crashes there. It was very difficult to manage in the air. It was, at the time, the heaviest plane in the world, kind of unstable. In the beginning, when they first put it out, there was a rash of incidents in which the tails of the plane just spontaneously came off in midair, and these planes would crash. Many, many people died in B-24s. Over the course of the war, they really proved their worth, though. I mean, they were great planes in their way, but it was dangerous to fly them.
That's right. Many people don't know there were more B-24s manufactured during World War II than there were even B-17s, which
has there are 18,000 of them.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, let me ask you a little bit more about World War II. You know, World War II veterans are dying at a rate of about 1,000 per day at this point, and their stories are being lost to history very, very quickly. So speculate for us, how many other stories that are as compelling as Louis do you think that they're out there that are remaining to be told?
Well, it was amazing for me because I interviewed many, many prisoners of war and airmen from that war. And to illustrate how rapidly they are going, 15 of them died before I published the book. They're going that fast. But none of these people had had their stories publicly told before, and these stories were astonishing. I think 11 of the men I interviewed had been in plane crashes. A whole bunch of them had been prisoners of war. They all had these stories, these lives that people don't live anymore, these lives just packed with drama. And they had participated in this war where they basically saved the world. And it was sad as they slipped away to think that their stories were being lost, knowing how many more were out there whose stories won't be told. And the feedback I'm getting now that the book is out, I'm getting many, many letters from people who are saying, you know, my father never could talk about what he went through in the war, and it's helping me to understand it by reading Louis Zamperini's story.
Oh, that is great. We're talking to Laura Hillenbrand, everybody. Her latest book is Unbroken. And Laura, in the theme of ironies, you write about such vibrant characters, and that's what makes your book so compelling. Yet, in kind of a cruel twist of fate, you suffer from chronic fatigue syndrome. So in what ways has your disease influenced who you write about and how you go about writing?
Well, to help people understand this disease, because the name is so misleading, it's a disease that causes things like fevers and night sweats and chills and swollen lymph nodes and very, very light-sensitive eyes. But the primary thing that we have is profound exhaustion. I mean, you will go through periods that sometimes last month, where you won't be able to turn yourself over in bed. You can't walk to your bathroom. I mean, it's truly incapacitating. I've had it since 1987, and I go up and down. I had a terrible period with it during the writing of this book, where I actually was unable to leave my home for 2 years. As a writer, it's been kind of an interesting thing to have because it makes you very, very familiar with suffering. It's something you can't ever escape with this disease. And one of the things that Louis Zamperini told me several times over the course of writing this is that it was easy to talk to me because he knew I understood what suffering was like. And it gave us a kind of communion together. We could talk that way, and it was the same with the other prisoners of war I spoke to. I'm very much drawn to people who live very, very vigorous lives, and people who can get out of being trapped in very difficult circumstances. And so this was the story that drew me for that reason.
Well, it is a very compelling story. We're talking to Laura Hillenbrand, everybody, author of the book Unbroken, a World War II story of survival, resilience, and redemption. Laura, I can't believe how quickly the time goes. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
I have a great website with video and many, many pictures and all kinds of things on it. It is www.unbroken-book.com, and the alternate name is Laura Hillenbrand Books.
So unbroken-book.com or Laura Hillenbrand, HILLENBRAND.com.
Yes.
All right.
Great. Laura Hillenbrand Books.com.
Book.com. All right, Laura. Thanks for that correction. I appreciate it. Loved your book, Unbroken. Thank you so much for being a guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a whole